not me. There's no identity in it. You don't need it anymore for an identity. And the future is fine too. Of course you need future for many things. Nobody denies that. But you don't look for yourself anymore in it. You can't find yourself there, so it's no longer problematic. It's no longer threatening, the future. Nor is it all that promising. It just is. And you deal with it. You make arrangements for next week to do this or that, next year, going this or there, make appointments for the future, work out something that you're going to do without seeking an identity through it. Simple, effortless doing, not straining. Effort means really you're seeking yourself in something. Everything when you're seeking yourself in it is effort. And it's strain, and it's stress. Then, after that, life is so simple. And why is it so simple? I'm not saying no challenges will ever come anymore. Of course they come. Challenges are wonderful. But they are simple because they're only now. There's nothing that big that can come into the field of now. And the power is there to deal with it now, when you allow whatever arises to arise. And if it needs a response, if it needs dealing with, there is vast power that immediately flows through you, and action, you take action. A few people have experienced that in emergency situations who suddenly did just the right thing, and people say, how could you have been so courageous to have done that? There was no thought involved. There was a greater power that took over. So, and then those people say, well, I don't know, I just did it. I don't know how it happened. They don't think that they did anything great because there was no me involved in it. Your whole life can be like that. Simply by continuously, by dwelling with your attention in the field of now, the field itself. Then let it happen. Let the world happen. It's great. Let the forms come and go as they will. No form stays for that long. Every form that comes, comes and goes. Let it come. You enjoy the play of form around you. The fear of loss is no longer there. Because why is there the fear of loss? Because there is an identification with some content, and there is the fear that if I lose that, I lose part of who I am. That's the fear of loss, whether it's fear of material loss, any kind of loss. That goes, so it's basically, it's the end of fear. And you can see what a miraculous transformation that is when humans no longer live dominated by fear. My God, you can actually live in a state of joy and aliveness continuously, no matter what arises. Because what arises isn't that important. It's a form. It's short-lived. It's a play of phenomenal existence. The universe playing with form. Consciousness playing with form. Let it play with form. You yourself become a participant in the play of form. You can create without self-seeking. And then you create beautifully. But when you create and there's self-seeking in it, you create, there's a negative energy field in that. I need, I want, I must have. Without that, I'm nobody. Oh, I mustn't lose that. And then there's competition. I need to fight him and her because he might get there before I do. And all the things that create our civilization goes. And the power of consciousness itself flows through you. It loves to create. So it'll create through you who knows what. You don't need to know it now. Let it flow. And then all there is left really in your life is the simplicity of this moment. And it's always quite simple. When you are no longer seeking yourself in past and future, then you can honor this moment, and honoring, embrace the now, because it is life. It's an expression of life. You embrace what is. Yes. Through that embrace, you know the spaciousness that is around the form that is there. This is the new state of consciousness that is arising in humans. This is the end of a personalized sense of self. So you're only a person now on the surface, just as a matter of convenience and for practical purposes, you are still a person on the surface. But there's not an identity in that person. There's not a sense of self anymore that I need, because you realize that there's the surface of you as a person, and you can keep your name even. Don't you don't have to say, I'm no longer using my name. Nor do you have to say, when somebody asks you, what's your name, would you say, I have gone beyond name and form. Because self-seeking can come back in through the back door. And when you tell somebody that you have gone beyond name and form, you're actually telling them, I am very special. I'm more special than you. You still have a name. A while ago I asked somebody, I don't know why I asked it, I don't usually ask, when were you born or where were you born? And he said, I was never born. Of course, it's true, but when he said it, it wasn't true. So you don't become special, you become quite ordinary in that, as that new consciousness arises. This, it doesn't say, look at me, quite ordinary. The need to be special, which is part of the mentally made sense of self, and that's an essential ingredient of it. Please let me be special. If I cannot be special and be a great success, at least let me be special in my misery. Please let me be more miserable than other people. The need for specialness goes. It's wonderful. You can be quite... You don't need to be anybody in particular. You are the field of now. It's vast. It's alive. You are the spaciousness around phenomena. What you don't... The need to stand out, to make an impression, isn't there. That... Even to have to strengthen your identity through having an opinion and telling somebody, you can still, words of course will still come out of your mouth, but not in a self-seeking mode. The need to be someone. Look at me. That's the egoic need. Or it gets inverted. Some egos don't like to be looked at. Don't look at me. But really, they want to be looked at. It's just the reverse. It is so simple. You sit here and you get it. And once you get it, what that really means is that it arises. And you have even a taste of it. You can never go back to the original madness for long. Because even to have a taste of this means, or that means it has emerged. Of course, it can become obscured again temporarily, and then you are back as a little me in the head and with its problems. And you can easily see when you look in the mirror or you look at somebody else, the moment it becomes obscured, a veil goes down in front of your eyes, are like suddenly veiled, and there's a deadness suddenly that comes over people when they're trapped again in mind. And what the expression in their eyes is telling them, I don't want to be here. It's a basic ingredient. I want to be somewhere. This isn't it. Let's get somewhere else. Let's get to the future fast. Trapped in thought. Trapped in mental noise. Now, mental noise, of course it'll still be there in you. Mental noise has a momentum. It's been there for 500,000 years. It has a certain momentum, so occasionally your mind may still be noisy, and then you see, there's so much noise. Look at all that noise in the head. You're no longer trapped in the noise. Even there, there can be a spaciousness around that. I'm full of mental noise, and that's okay. Even that you can allow. If that's the case at this moment, all right, let there be mental noise. Go on, let there be mental noise. And you'll be amazed how quickly you go beyond it, beyond anything that you allow completely. Oh, I'm so unhappy with my life. Okay, be unhappy. Let me be unhappy. I say okay to my unhappiness. It's fine. I allow myself to be unhappy. I'm unhappy. I say yes to my unhappiness. It's not that bad to be unhappy. See what happens if you do that. I don't mind being unhappy. It's miraculous. The power of surrender, that really what it is, the power of the yes that you bring into the no. The no is still has a momentum, the no to what is predominantly, and it has a momentum. So it will appear and reappear inside you unless the miracle of radical transformation happens to you here and now as you sit here. That's possible too. In some cases it happens. That once and for all, the no dissolves and never returns. It can happen. It's very rare. Usually you have to suffer dreadfully for that to happen. So you're not suffering perhaps quite enough here. Mostly, the no still has a certain momentum. And you will know the no when it happens. You will be able, because presence is arising, all that is required of you is to see that you are in the no modality, in the no mode of consciousness. In any moment, there's an inner tightening, there's an inner contraction, and there is a monologue or a dialogue in your head that complains about this moment and says, this shouldn't be happening, this, no, I don't want this. Or the no is a more subtle thing. It's disguised as, okay, well, there's something more important that I need to get to, and not, this isn't the moment I'm interested in. I need to get there. I'm not interested in now, I'm interested in then, there. That's very habitual, and that's a disguised no, because it's not an obvious no, it's simply a denial of now, because the future is regarded as more important. Whether it's the next minute, or tonight, or this weekend, or in a few years when I will have made it, it doesn't matter. The future is regarded as more important, and that is a subtle no, a disguised no to what is. I need to get to the future. And again, of course, it's connected with the self-seeking. I need to become somebody in the future, a bigger self. Some presence, you cannot see it, you become the no, as most people still are in this world. They are walking no's. But there's enough presence in you. Many of you have been here the whole weekend, and presence is arising anyway. There's enough presence in you to recognize the no when it happens. And not to fall into the error of superimposing another no on that no and saying, you see, I shouldn't be feeling, I shouldn't be in that contraction, I'm doing it again. You see, it's no good, it just doesn't work for me. No, that would be a no on top of the no. When you see a no in whatever form it comes to this moment, you see, you recognize it's a no. And you recognize it's some form of tightening or contraction. And what do you do then? You say, oh, okay, that's how it is. There's the contraction. There's the no again. Let it be. Let the contraction be. And see what happens. So you bring the yes into the no, the yes into the no. That's all you need. It's very simple. Nothing is rejected and denied or complained about. Nothing that is, inside or outside. And then more and more you know who you are beyond that which arises in the now. You're no longer looking for yourself in that which arises, whether it be an event, a thought, an emotion, a sense perception, anything. you know yourself to be the field in which it arises, or the spaciousness around all the content, all the events in your life. You are that. And that's a state of peace, no matter what happens. There's always, because that undercurrent is peace itself. And it's you. It's not, it is the essence of who you are, which is not separate from the essence of your partner, your person next to you, anybody, or any form. And the miracle is, once you know who you are, and you cannot necessarily say anything about it, it's a miracle that I can say so much about it, something that cannot be spoken of. Once you know who you are, you know your own essence, then you know the essence in every other form, life form, because you are one in your essence with every other life form. And then you look at the flower and recognize your own essence in the flower. And then you look at a cat and recognize your own essence in the cat. And then you look at another human being, and you may have to pierce through layers of mental ego stories, mental noise, the veil, and you pierce through it. Just stay alert and you look, you can ignore the story and all that. You look and then you know the essence of that human being is who you are. You know every life form as yourself, manifested in a different form, because the universe or consciousness likes the play of form. That's the beauty of the manifested universe. And you know yourself to be the unmanifested one life before it is born into a form. The one life before it becomes something or someone. The one life after a form dissolves. The timeless one consciousness. If God has any meaning, that is what it is. So, self-realization and God-realization, of course, the same. The only place God can be known is in yourself as your own essence, not separate. As Jesus already said, the kingdom of heaven is within. It's not there in space or time. So you know God. That's how it is. If you don't like the word, drop that word. It's only a word. Don't get entangled with any word. And so, when you know each life form as yourself, that is called love. And that is an essential part of the new consciousness. You are then continuously in a state of love. Not the egoic so-called love that says, I can't live without you. Don't you ever leave me. Not that kind of love. That's clinging. No, the love that knows the other as yourself. It's so simple. And love your neighbor as yourself. Because the teaching of Jesus only exists in fragments that people have written down. Jesus was pointing to a state of consciousness that is possible for humans, that is emerging here now, which he sometimes called the kingdom of heaven. And what he said was, I wasn't there, but I know what. The essence is timeless. It speaks the truth no matter. It's always the same. Once you know the essence, you know what they said. Even if you get a mistranslation, you still know what they said when the essence speaks. Know, in that new state of consciousness, you know your neighbor to be yourself. You love your neighbor as yourself when you know your neighbor to be yourself. So you love your neighbor, not, he didn't mean as you love yourself, but as yourself, because your neighbor is yourself. And of course, people have been trying to love their neighbor because as unsuccessfully for so long, because they didn't realize the depths of the teaching. They thought all we have to do is to obey a few commandments and do as he tells us. But the depth was that it was pointing to a completely new state of consciousness. And you cannot practice the fruit of the new state of consciousness in the old state of consciousness. And that's why the discrepancy comes that Christianity has a history of violence. Amazing. But the truth is there, hidden, simple, very simple. This is the now. It hasn't changed, never will change. We are moving beyond thought. There's a book by Krishnamurti which is called The Awakening of Intelligence. And really, this is what it is. But intelligence, not as defined by academic textbooks, is not the intelligence that you can be measured in IQ tests. All that IQ tests measure is your ability to solve little puzzles. Intelligence is so much vaster than that. And that is what is arising here and now. It's intelligence that operates noiselessly. That does not exclude thought. The vastness of it includes thought. But it's far beyond thought. Thought is small. But thought, even thought, can be inspired, informed, and energized by that vast intelligence when thought is no longer trapped within itself. When a self is identified with thought, thought is like a knot, K-N-O-T. You have tied yourself into a knot. Intelligence cannot flow through freely. This is the untying of the knot in both senses of the word. The no to life and the knot is being untied. Then the vaster intelligence can move through, and it can even express itself through the mind. You can speak from that state of still presence. It then will, the energy of that field then flows into the words, and the words are empowered. Of course, they are not new. Very rarely does it happen that one creates new words, nor is it necessary. Every word is old. It has a history. There's nothing you can do about that. Every thought, most thought is conceptual, words. It's old. It has a history. And yet, when a word arises out of that vastness, not the prison of a little mind, self-serving mind, a mind that is now open to the influx of the greater intelligence, then it can be, the mind can also be inspired by that. It can then give form, and it will come creative forms, new forms. There's a freshness, a newness, an aliveness, and a power to the forms that the mind then gives birth to, because the mind becomes aligned, one with the vastness of intelligence, as it did with every creative person in the world. Every creative person, somewhere in their field of creativity, were aligned with the greater intelligence. Not usually in their whole lives, but here our whole lives are becoming transformed by that. So I've been speaking for a long time. Words have been coming out of my mouth, this mouth. And yet, the words came out of the field of presence. Of course, they are old words, but there is a power to those words that goes beyond the informational value of the words. That has its place too. The words point to the truth. They have a certain informational value. You can then see where madness is, and you can see where the end of madness is. The informational value of words, but the words that come, that are spoken from presence, have an energetic quality to them, which comes from the vastness of presence or consciousness. They are, so to speak, charged with the energy of that. And that's why it's beautiful to sit here and listen to the words that come, that are spoken by presence, as the words, you listen to the words are being decoded by your mind. The mind extracts the meaning from the words, but that is not the end of the words. Then the words go deeper into yourself, and what's left of the words is the energy of presence that they carry. They become carriers of that, and then they awaken the presence in you. They go in. So you can drink in, when words come, are spoken from presence, you can drink in those words, and after a while you cannot even bother anymore with the information level of the words. That's why some people come to all my talks. They don't hear anything new anymore, nor is it necessary. But there's an awakening through the energy quality of the sound of the words of presence. And that's the beauty of spiritual discourse, and that's the power of spiritual discourse. Spiritual discourse does not come from a person, does not come from accumulated knowledge. And you know it when you hear it. You can sense the power, something within you responds. It is a self-recognition. The words have an energetic quality to them. That's why we've been here and you've been listening. Now, if you were only here as a mind, if the screen of mind as you are sitting here had been so dense that all that you could get from sitting here was the informational value of the words, but the screen of minds might have prevented you from allowing these words to sink more deeply into yourself, then it's not all that interesting after a while. You sit here and say, okay, I've heard enough now. I've taken a few notes. I could have read this in books, perhaps. Yeah, it was interesting, but now what's the next thing? Where's the next interesting bit of information? That's the mind. Let's go on to the next bit. There's a little gap now. Gaps are good. Whatever arises in you as sense experience, as you go out of here, things that arise from within, allow it all so completely that you can sense the now itself in which it happens. As yourself. That's the secret, the open secret.